RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Brian Leyland is a New Zealand-based consulting engineer with experience in all aspects of the power industry. His main interest is hydropower, but he also has experience in wind, solar, tidal, and wave power. And we've invited Brian onto the program this morning to talk about the government's policy statement to the Electricity Authority and what it would really take to achieve. Brian, thanks for coming on and speaking with us this morning.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, where do we start with this? They have laudable goals, right?
Yes. Government policy statement says its priority is on a reliable and economic supply, and I couldn't agree more. That's right. A very laudable and, in my belief, the only objective that we should have.
Okay, how to get there? What have they charted out as a course? Can you tell us?
This is where it gets complicated, because on the next page, they say that they think it could be done with. They say first that there's going to be a big increase in load. And this comes from electrifying transport and electrifying industry. And that's a dubious assumption, which I'll talk about more later.
Okay.
But then they believe that they can achieve a reliable economic supply by increasing the amount of wind and solar by a very large amount, 3 or 4 times as much as we've got now. And that raises huge problems, especially affordability and reliability of supply.
First of all, can that account for any growth in energy demand and use, the renewables? Because all we hear is that, nice to have, but, you know, the wind's not blowing, if the sun's not shining, forget it.
Well, they seem to believe that it can. Now, I'm going on now to the Electricity Authority and their documents, and they seem to believe that with large amounts of wind and solar, we can meet the load. And they think that they can compensate for times when the wind's not blowing, the sun's not shining, by consumers and industry and commerce losing their electricity in response to very high prices, of course. But they don't seem to, and they also believe that the existing hydropower stations can produce a lot more power when needed and for short periods, which is not true. They're fully committed already managing the existing system, and they haven't got any capacity to do much more.
So that's not accurate. Well, they're saying it's not accurate.
It's based on an assumption that you can do it with wind and solar, and the assumption doesn't stand up to close examination.
I'm getting extra capacity out of hydro. How is that possible without extra turbines and an expansion of that?
I think they can do it by keeping the lakes fuller than usual, using the surplus wind power to shut down the hydro power.
That's how they've thought about it. Okay.
That means that the hydropower stations will spill more often. So they'll finish up overall generating less power. But you will have the problem that the wind power in excess periods will be in a substantial excess, and they will have to dump power too. So they will finish up generating less power, and they will finish up earning less money, and who'll want to build one?
I might be jumping the gun a bit on our chat, but there must be another way.
Nuclear power?
Oh, someone actually said it.
Yeah. I'm a very strong fan of nuclear power. I'm a hydropower engineer. I know a lot about the dangers of large dams. I know a lot about the safety of nuclear power. And it is remarkably safe. No Western nuclear power station has ever killed anyone from radiation.
How long has it taken you to come to that view on nuclear power?
I've held it for quite a long time.
Yeah.
It was confirmed when I had lunch with Professor Wade Allison in Oxford a few years ago. And he's one of the world experts on the medical effects of radiation.
Uh-huh.
And he pointed out that the evidence is the low levels of radiation, up to about half a fatal dose, are harmless.
Really?
Basically what,
okay.
Yeah. What happens is it stirs up your immune system and it gets into business and repairs the damage that the radiation has done. When you get doses over that, towards the 6,000 millisieverts, your immune system can't cope. And so you die, and you die within 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So in 3 weeks, you fail or you survive.
Yeah, I've seen the Chernobyl documentary. I watched that, and those guys got huge doses. And it was an old-style reactor, wasn't it?
It was a Model T Ford.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't refuse to drive a modern car because a Model T didn't have seatbelts. But that's the parallel.
Yeah, that was another era.
Yeah.
How doable is that for a country like New Zealand then?
There's a whole raft of small mass-produced nuclear stations coming on, small modular reactors. And when they get through the regulatory process, which is ridiculous compared to the danger, you'll be able to buy them like sausages.
So what would that be worth? I'm just trying to get my head around what that would cost.
Probably when they get into mass production, about the same as geothermal.
Okay, so it's competitive.
And they'll probably have a longer life, and they're probably easier to manage.
And cheaper to produce the power, ultimately, because that's where it touches the consumer, right?
Yeah. At the moment, amongst the cheapest power that America produces comes from its old nuclear stations, which have been running for 60 years, some of them.
Wow.
I mean, a wind farm will last maybe 20 years. A solar farm will last about 15. When you build one of those, you commit yourself to mining for all the materials you need endlessly. And they talk about being anti-mining and pro-wind power. It's ridiculous.
Why do you think the industry has become then fixated with wind and solar? We have a hydro sort of history. Can't we put in a new dam somewhere?
Yes. On the upstream and downstream of Clyde and Roxburgh.
Right.
There are several sites which were identified and studied by the Ministry of Works. I don't know if they're still available, but I mean, as they were, sites were secured, I don't know if that's still the case, but you could build maybe another 500 or 600 megawatts. There's probably overall more than 1,002 megawatts. We've got 5,300 at the moment, so you could nearly double our hydro capacity, but nearly all in the South Island, and then you have the problem of getting it to the North Island.
Another cable, right?
And the cable's fully loaded at the moment. We can get a bit more out of it with a fourth cable, but after that, it's a whole new transmission line and whole duplication.
Yeah, but we've done that before as well.
Yeah, but we've never doubled the transmission line. We've just upped its rating. It's the same old line that we built in the 1970s.
Yeah, yeah. So with hydro, is there are there any risks like seismic and risks like that? I mean, again, we've been doing this for a long time. No worries yet.
No, the seismic design of dams is pretty well established. And Clyde, they found a fault under that, and they put a joint in the dam, which was a pioneering thing, and it seems to be very successful. So the two halves of the dam can move by maybe half a meter, and it won't leak. It's a very clever piece of engineering.
That's smart, isn't it? That's smart.
It's very smart, yeah.
So to put nuclear in, do we have more than one? I think you're alluding to that with the modular design. So what will we have multiples sort of scattered around the place?
The modular design, they're usually between 100 of the small ones, which I don't think you'd bother with, but 300 or 400 megawatts. So you put in three or four of them at one site, 1,200, maybe 2,000 megawatts. There's a good site on the Kaipara, which has got good cooling water, and it's north of Auckland. So it doesn't increase the need to have more transmission capacity from the south of Auckland. There's a good site on the Hauraki Gulf as well. And that wouldn't mean too much. But you're putting them near the load, which is where they ought to be, not at the bottom of the South Island, which is difficult.
There is the NIMBY issue,
Yes. And it's very strong. And I've never understood why the people who are so worried about man-made global warming hate nuclear power. And 30 years ago when I first got interested in all this, it was that fact, I believed it in those days. And then I realized I hated nuclear power. That didn't add up to common sense. So yeah. I started looking further and finally became a climate skeptic in a big way.
You naughty engineer.
Yes, I'm proud of it.
Yeah, so it's political, it's ideological, isn't it?
It's almost religion.
Religion, okay, well, that's no good.
According to Crichton, he wrote an essay in 2003 before he died, environmentalism is a new religion, and it's got all the characteristics of a new religion, the whole crisis thing. You have sinned, the world is coming to an end, you must do penance and pay me money.
Yeah, punish ourselves. In terms of the resistance because of the perception of nuclear power, have you done anything on how you can get around that?
I think I've opened debate in the public. I talk quite regularly to groups of old people on net zero, the dream and the reality, and I very often ask them if they think we should be considering nuclear power. I don't think adopting, that's too quick. And usually about half the audience put their hand up. Not many put their hands up when I asked them who thinks we should not be considering it. So I think the public are ahead of the politicians and others in this. But we just put it to the test. That's all. Discuss it. Have an open discussion. How about that?
Yeah. The way that the market is structured, Brian, seems to lead to bad outcomes. It's supposed to be a competitive market, isn't it? I hear Shane Jones, he's been on this program, blaming gen tailors, et cetera.
Basic structure of the market is not suited to the electricity business. It just doesn't work. There's a whole lot of assumptions behind the market which don't apply to the electricity business. And the main assumption is that every new power station produces power cheaper than the previous one. Well, our cheapest power stations are the old depreciated hydro schemes.
Ironically. Yeah, there you go.
As a result of this market, they're getting the same price as the big thermal stations, which produce carbon dioxide and pay carbon tax. So, in effect, we're paying carbon tax on hydropower. It's crazy. The other thing is that electricity should be a long-term boring business. Providing the lifeblood of the economy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we should be regarding droughts as a national problem, not a generator can't fix a drought. Why are you expecting them to take the risk on droughts when they've got no control over it? Why do you expect them to take the risk? It's just...
Should we renationalize the system?
No, it's not a good idea. Ministry of Works and the old NZED, when it was a government outfit, were terribly inefficient. There were some very good engineers and there were some very poor ones.
Right, okay.
Had a monopoly. But what you need is somebody sitting in the middle, coordinating all the generation and saying, I need this sort of generating plant and I'm going to put it out to tender for someone to build and operate the station for 25 or 30 years. And they will get a fixed fee for being there and looking after the station and covering their profits. How much they generate won't affect their profits. So the system operator can say, the lakes are low, I need to run the thermal stations to fill up. So the thermal stations run hard, but they don't make more money, which they would do now. Or the lakes are very high, I'm going to shut down the thermal stations and they're not even going to run for the next 6 months. And under the present market, all the thermal stations would scream because they've got no income. Under this market, they would say, okay, doesn't worry us. We're there. We're ready to do your bidding. Bidding. It is a real, genuine market.
Okay, well, why are we doing it then?
Because the outfit at the moment is run by people who don't understand power systems. Many of them are academic economists who believe if you call something a market, then it is a market, and that's it, and markets work, and that's it. I said so.
I see, yeah. But it doesn't work, that's the thing, and we've seen evidence of that lately with the closure in Oakuni of the Winstone.
Yeah,
mill.
But the fact that we had a major shortage this year, Huntley didn't have enough coal in the stockpile. Why? Because they relied on the market to pay Huntley to buy and store the coal. So only a few generators did, so they had 350,000 tonnes on their stockpile, whereas they should have had a million.
Right, yeah.
During the worst of the drought, when things were quite serious, it wasn't running at full power because it didn't have enough coal. Ridiculous. The electricity system is a gigantic machine which relies for stability on exactly the same amount being generated as is being used. And if we get a disparity between the two, the frequency goes up, which is problematic, or goes down, which is even worse. And you're fighting it the whole time just to keep the system stable. It's not a big, stable, steady thing. It's an unstable beast that needs to be fine-tuned the whole time.
How long does it take to put in a nuclear power plant, usually? I mean, what would the lead-in time be?
2 years.
For is that all?
Well, we've got to dig a hole in the ground, put in a bit of civil works and drop the thing in and connect it up. Because it all comes factory built. But an environmentalist and.
But there's no evidence to suggest any of that, right?
No. These ones particularly are inherently safe. Nothing you can do with them will cause them to melt down catastrophically. If they get too hot, they just back off and shut down.
Yeah.
At worst, they might have a core meltdown, which means but the core and everything be contained, which means, oh, poo. Well, that one's broken.
Yeah.
To leave it alone for a while.
Yeah, for a couple of thousand years.
Really, really catastrophic thing.
Why do you think the establishment is so fixated on renewables like solar and wind?
I think it's groupthink.
Groupthink, okay.
Yeah. Groupthink. I think they're all infected with groupthink and the good old, we all say so, it must be true. And they're not open to contemplating the possibility that they're wrong or getting advice from what I think they should do urgently is get a red team in. Somebody brought in a group of people, power system engineers who know this stuff, brought in to challenge all their assumptions. And as far as I can see, all the key assumptions they made are not founded on hard evidence. So if they agree with me, we've got to start again. You've got to look at the structure of the industry, the structure of the market, and what on earth do we do now?
How long do you think we've got to sort this out?
A couple of years. I mean, Transpower right now is saying if next year is dry, we'll be in worse trouble than we were this year.
Okay.
And it's given quite constant warnings. And the year after is worse. The gas supplies are declining. What we should be doing is taking the gas that we've got and putting it in storage for emergencies, contingencies, and dry years. We're not, because nobody will pay a fixed sum every year for someone to buy and maintain a gas store. This is, they won't pay for Huntley to have enough coal on stockpile, enough for New Zealand, not enough for the few retailers who are wise enough or stupid enough to purchase hedges.
All right, I'm going to ask you to give a mark out of 10 for the government's policy statement to the Electricity Authority. Mark out of 10.
Firstly, objectives are really good. That's it.
Okay, got that. Yep.
We'd be a lot better off. It's how to do it. I mean, first you've got to, I suspect, and if I'm right, and I may not be, start again with the whole industry. The market.
That's a big call. That's a big call.
Then you doing that, you say, well, what do we do now? We haven't got enough gas. We can't build hydro stations either at all or quickly enough. What we can do is import more coal, but we can certainly go into gas storage and we can go into coal storage in a much bigger way with annual funding. And that's about it. But we can't contemplate major increases for transportation and industrial heating because we just haven't got the power. And that's it. We just haven't got it.
Do you think your phone's going to ring, Brian? Do you think someone's going to call you up and say, hey, Brian, I've been reading what you've been saying, listening to what you've been saying, and we should talk?
No.
Come on in. No?
Okay. I've been saying all this for the last 10 or 20 years.
Right. Okay, they would have come by now. Nuclear power in New Zealand at some point will be here, don't you think?
If we keep on believing that it's important to reduce emissions of carbon dioxide, which I don't agree. Yes. If we give up on that belief because it doesn't make any difference to the climate and it's just a futile waste of money and there's no concrete evidence that carbon dioxide is a danger, it's all realized in computer models, then we can burn coal.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah. And we can drill for gas with confidence. And we've
still with a smile on our face.
To find.
Yeah. All right, Brian Leyland, great to have you on our program to hear your thoughts on that. And really interesting to chat with you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. It's been very enjoyable.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.